Forgotten America now has a voice. America's Voice, Steve Gruber.
You probably remember the standoff in Philadelphia here recently where a gunman kept dozens of officers from Philadelphia at bay, shot six. Luckily, none seriously. I can't believe a guy was that terrible, but he was. Good news for the police, bad news for him. His name is Maurice Hill. And joining me now is Ryan Morrow, the director of the Clarion Intelligence Network. And Ryan's on the program here because they found some, well, some disturbing information about this guy. You probably won't hear it anywhere else. Ryan, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you as always. All right, so this Maurice Hill, he's a known felon, a known drug dealer guy, not allowed to have guns. We know all of those things. Held police at bay for, what, 6-8 hours. Finally arrested. Yeah. But what have you learned in your investigation?
Well, with my work at the Clarion Intelligence Network, one of the things that we do is we collaborate with law enforcement a lot, and we have sources in Muslim communities across the country. And so pretty rapidly, we learned that the shooter in this Philadelphia incident was in an area where there was a known crime network that traffics in drugs and guns and includes jihadist elements. And also deals with the Mexican drug cartels. We then had information come in indicating that he attended a radical mosque. That was then confirmed when his older sister told a press outlet that he was attending a mosque in a specific area, which was referring to the one that we had received information about. They are closely following the teachings of Saudi scholars. They believe in creating an Islamic state, even some of the clerics that they follow justify slavery as part of jihad. And so the question becomes, if he was attending a radical mosque, did that influence him carrying out this shooting? Because remember, he had been arrested a bunch of times before. In this incident, he didn't, from what we know, really try to escape. In this incident, he carried out a mass shooting, put his life on the line for that. When he didn't have to, and previously he did not, so he's not scared of jail. So what changed here? Sometimes radical Islamic beliefs doesn't always manifest itself in what we would call a terrorist attack. Sometimes manifests itself in other types of destructive behavior, which could include a greater likelihood of shooting police, resisting arrest, and doing other acts of violence.
So when you look at something like this, then, do you put this up as a possible act of terrorism? I ask you that because, as I recall from this incident, the police went there to execute a search warrant or an arrest warrant. They weren't there, and he didn't set out to attack the police. They weren't there by chance, and he wasn't going out to create a terrorist attack, if you will, Ryan. You understand my point here. But does this still get labeled in your right mind as a terrorist event?
I would say it's potentially an act of radical Islamic violence because there could be multiple motivations for carrying out an attack. It doesn't have to be pre-planned. It could just be that you're filled with anti-police bigotry facilitated by radical Islamic beliefs, which do intersect, and therefore that makes someone more likely to do something evil like this. Now, the way that the shooting went down, or at least the initial raid, is that the police searched the building next to him. And then they went over to where he was, and according to the reports out there, he was waiting in the kitchen. He had an opportunity to potentially escape, but no, he was waiting. He wanted that fight to happen. So why is that? Now, on a broader level, there is a criminal network that may have provided him with the guns, because we do not have any publicly available information explaining where he got his AR-15 that he was not allowed to have. And so there is a network within Pennsylvania that extends up to Michigan, I'm sorry to say, and into other states that is radical Islamic in nature, deals with the Mexican drug cartels, and is essentially an underground criminal syndicate and paramilitary network.
All right, so from Philadelphia to Detroit is what you're telling me. From Philadelphia to Detroit and that whole region, then, is this organization operating? What do you have a name for this organization? What do they specialize in, and is it something we should be focused and concerned on because of other terrorist potential events happening?
Right. So this is perhaps the most dangerous radical Islamic network in the United States. It's called UMMAH, U-M-M-A-H, and they go by other names as well. But in Detroit, one of their leaders in, I think it was 2009, got into a shootout with the police because he was basically planning terrorist attacks. He wanted to hit federal targets and kill police. They raided the facility that he was at. He shot a police dog in the process, and then he died in the shootout. And when you look at the court documents and the police documents from that shootout, what you see is that he was part of a broader network that extended into Flint, Michigan, into other parts of Michigan, into a bunch of other states. And this UMMAH group, according to published reports in the mainstream media, not like a conservative or a fringe website, according to mainstream media sources, UMMAH controls about 30 mosques across the country. And it's clear from these police documents that this is a criminal syndicate with jihadist beliefs.
So a criminal syndicate with jihadist beliefs, do you believe that an organization like that should be labeled as a domestic terrorist organization?
Well, certainly. And they have been in specific federal investigations, but they have to be prosecuted on illegal activity, and it's not illegal to be radical. When there is evidence of specific criminal activity, such as stealing cars and selling them, selling drugs, things like that, the feds will build a case knowing that this is a terror-linked individual, but they'll be going after him on the basis of criminal activity. There actually is no domestic terrorism list that makes it illegal for you to join a domestic organization. You have to be connected to an international organization so that you can be charged with supporting a foreign terrorist organization. But domestic, there isn't a list that says you can't join this group, and if you do, you go to jail.
So I want to shift gears a little bit. Ryan Morrow here, director of the Clarion Intelligence Network. Ryan, you've been on this program many times. We've discussed the spread of radicalized Islamic terror in the United States, among other things. Is it a growing threat today? Is it status quo? Where are we with this potential problem here today?
It has decreased somewhat because of the setbacks that ISIS has felt, but Al-Qaeda is rising at the same time overseas. And what you'll see happen probably at some point within the next year, maybe two, is that just like ISIS, you're going to see Al-Qaeda make a comeback and rapidly seize territory. When that happens, that then inspires new waves of jihadists, people who either weren't radicalized or were a little radicalized but hadn't really gone over the edge. When there's success overseas, you see the impact of that right here within the United States. So I would say that we're a little bit safer now, but the fundamental threat there hasn't really been altered. That pool has not been drained. What is increasing the threat, though, is really the rising threat, and it is a rising threat, of white supremacist, anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant extremists, because these jihadists believe that essentially you're in the end times and that they are destined to erupt in a nationwide uprising against the U.S. government, the Zionist forces, as they call them, police, all of them, that we're headed towards a war of the extreme. So all of them fuel each other.
Ryan Morrow, how do people find you and what you're studying and what you're learning real quickly?
Sure. ClarionProject.org is the best place to go and sign up for our newsletter.
ClarionProject.org. Ryan Morrow, always appreciate your time. It's the Steve Gruber Show back after this.
DTE wants to help your business build Michigan's future. Whether your business is large, small, or in between, a DTE expert will help you find ways to improve energy efficiency and add incentives through our many programs. Programs that can help you save money. Money you can use to create jobs and invest in the future. You see, DTE wants you to be successful. Because when your business thrives, Michigan does too. DTE. At DTE, our business is making sure you have reliable, affordable natural gas to keep your business running. So we constantly upgrade and monitor our system 24/7, 365. We also buy natural gas in the summer when prices are low and store it for winter. Because at DTE, part of our business is to keep your business costs affordable all year long. Learn more at DTEenergy.com. DTE.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
That moment, we arrived in the scene.
The storm had nearly destroyed the area.
This was our own community. Friends, family, people we grew up with, went to school with. We were there to help.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
They made it down to the storm cellar, but the house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had chainsaws going, and we had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Right here, close to home, in my state.
It was one of those life-changing moments where I realized I am making a difference in these people's lives and mine. I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
You can serve part-time and be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Michigan National Guard, aired by the Michigan Association of Broadcasters and this station.